This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com, and by Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KABU, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or Facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
I'm Dimi Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to music from Shen Yun Performing Artists. They're a large-scale spectacle show detailing 5,000 years of Chinese history despite persecution. They're performing in Portland on March 27th through the 29th. We'll find out more about that in the latter part of the show. But first up, we hear about Well Arts Institute's new show, Fierce Love, featuring the stories of parents writing about their kids with cerebral palsy. It's all about the healing power and spirit of performance right here on Stage and Studio. So stay tuned. I'm Dimae Roberts. With me in the studio today are Erica Turpening-Romeo. Hello.
Hello.
And Heath Hyun Houghton.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Welcome back. And writer Susan Cushman. Hello.
Good
Welcome
morning.
To Stage and Studio, all of you. You're all from Well Arts Institute's new show, Fierce Love. Now, I featured Well Arts through the years since it began in 2000 under the leadership of Kate Hawks. And that's going way, way back, Heath. What's fascinating about the organization, though, is the ability to connect with different pockets of communities and organizations throughout Portland to create these moving performances of personal stories, from personal people's personal stories. And for Fierce Love, you all gathered 6 women for 10 weeks to talk about their experiences caring for children with cerebral palsy. Would you talk a little bit more about that process, Heath?
Absolutely. We began in November, and we did a 10-week writing workshop with the 6 women in the room. And in December, Erica Turpening-Romeo joined us as a co-facilitator in the room. The experience of writing workshops, they're incredibly warm and inclusive experiences. So people in my experience facilitating, they share stories and they share feelings and thoughts that just have this really empowering and healing potential and capacity.
And do you find that with every show, or is this one especially moving for you?
I have found that, but it's expressed in different ways.
Right.
Perhaps Susan could speak a little bit more about her experience in the workshop.
Well, you're one of the 6 writers,
right?
Then, but you're also partnering. You know, you're the major partner for the United Cerebral Palsy of Oregon.
Right. I'm the family support director at United Cerebral Palsy, and I've gathered the 6 women together that would do the writing, and
wow.
So we met. And in fact, there's an article in the Portland Tribune today about the play, and one of the other moms had never written a word. Her son is 31.
Wow.
But she'd always wanted to, and she found the experience completely healing and phenomenal, and how close we all felt to each other after that first week, where we had these little writing exercises and we shared some things we'd never shared perhaps with anyone, and we shared them with the group, and everyone felt close from the very beginning. So I think most of us came into it wanting to let the community know what our lives are like. And then the byproduct is also healing our own selves.
Well, what kind of topics came up during the workshops when you were writing?
I think at the beginning, well, for my own self, I was writing about the painful stuff first, because it just felt cathartic to get down on paper. You won't believe what this teacher said to my daughter once, or writing about how hard the diagnosis was. That's where we started. We all started with the diagnosis, now I remember, because it's not an easy thing to hear a diagnosis for your child. I mean, my daughter was 4 months old. She's just a tiny baby.
And they were able to diagnose that young.
Yeah. Yeah, they can. Some are later, but I heard of a baby who was diagnosed at 1 week. So it just depends on the lack. You know, she was born not breathing, so they knew something might be up. And they can do MRIs and they can do tests, but sometimes just the quality of the child's movement. So we all had pain around the diagnosis, even though it helps you have a stepping off point. It's not what you expected. It's not what you thought when you were pregnant that you're going to have a child with a disability.
Did you find you were going through a linear process, starting with a diagnosis and then moving forward? So what were some of the other topics?
Lots of therapy, having to go to therapists all the time.
Physical
therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. You know, and one of the lines I wrote was that I couldn't just be your mother. I had to be an occupational therapist. I had to learn how to be a physical therapist and especially a speech therapist. And so we all have that, like spending so much time doing therapy with our kids. And there's a scene with one of the dads where I don't want to do therapy with my kid. That's what we pay the therapist for. I just want to hold my kid. Mm. But, you know, you're supposed to hold them this certain way. And then move into school and difficulties with school.
Was there financial support for all the therapies? I mean, you know, I don't know
depends.
What the situation is medically.
Well, my daughter had 20 visits a year, and she needed 3 a week. So that's why we went to Shriners. Shriners was free, and we got to go to Shriners, and they did three therapies.
Oh, that's good to know.
It's really good to know, yeah. Yeah.
So you went through the therapies, and then at what point did it start changing, as far as some of the topics? What else did you cover?
A lot of the writing in the workshops in the beginning is about getting the participants to trust their own imaginations and just get things down on paper. So in the beginning of the workshop process, so much of it is writing exercises that get them exploring and using their imagination as a tool. And to that end, a lot of the early writings were these fantasy expressions of how they were coping with their emotions and their experiences in this new life that they perhaps did not expect.
Well, that sounds healing too.
It was.
So it was an interesting way to get them to help them explore their experiences through different writing exercises.
Well, it sounds like a full round process. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Susan Cushman, Erica Turpening Romeo, and Heath Hyun Houghton. And they're from Well Arts, new show Fierce Love, which runs March 17th through April 4th at Milagro Theater. That's in Southeast Portland. So you had these writing workshops. It was a long process. I'm sure, did these women all know each other ahead of time?
No.
So you really got to know each other.
Yes.
And you, Erica, and Heath got to know them as well through this, because it's so personal to write about this whole process. Now, you have all these pieces of writing. Erica, how did you work with Heath in co-facilitating, co-directing, and to shape these into a theater pieces?
Well, it was a hugely collaborative process for the whole group, with the moms and with Heath, and there was so much material, which was really exciting for us, that at a certain point in the workshop, the participants were just generating so much wonderful material. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it's better to have too much, right?
We definitely, I mean, we could build a whole second evening of work with the stuff that didn't end up in the show, and it was all so rich and wonderful. So we asked questions. We just tried to figure out what sort of shape served the stories we had and what kind of evening of theater we wanted to create, everyone together. So we had the first big choice to make with figuring out how to compile things was, do we want to have like a central character and follow them? Do we want to have the actors playing the writers themselves? Or do we want to create a kind of chorus of voices that can all hold all the material that we had? So what we ended up doing is building new characters, jumping off from the really imaginative work that was coming out of the workshop, rather than telling Susan's story as Susan and Michelle's story as Michelle, finding ways to build new characters. So we have, you know, a character, Jill, for example, who has pieces from several of the different writers, but we've shaped them so that they all tell Jill's story, which isn't exactly Susan's story or Anne's story.
Did a composite for these characters.
And so each of the six performers is herself a composite, each of the six characters. And then we have them all supporting each other. So, you know, we have a named character in a scene, but then three of the other actors on stage are playing, you know, the the bad teacher or the husband or the child, the voice of the child, or in several scenes, and these are some of my favorites, honestly, when the writer's voice itself is split into several characters. So we get to hear, you know, the voices that you hear in your head, the conversations you have to have with yourself to sort of pick yourself up or to switch gears in those really intense moments where you're faced with what feels like an overwhelming proposition, and getting to externalize that. So we see those conversations happening as scenes between different characters. That was a really fun part of the process and figuring out how to weave everything together.
Was there a piece that was the most challenging to do, to direct?
Gosh. Well, you know what's funny? So when we were, there's a one scene where we've split. We have a kind of, if it were a film, it would be a split screen where you have one scene on one side of the stage and one scene on the other, and they're sort of overlapping. And in the script, when we were just reading the initial draft around the table with just the writers, we hadn't cast the show yet, I assumed, and I think the group sort of assumed, that that would be an especially difficult scene to make clear. There was a lot going on. Every actor is speaking at once, and we're flipping back and forth between these two scenes. And honestly, it turned out to be the most intuitive scene to stage, mm-hmm. and I think for the actors to perform. It's a really theatrical moment, and there are a lot of... That's something that really happened in the workshop about halfway through, I would say, is the writers locked into what makes for good theater and started writing in that way. And so those scenes, the more theatrically written, were presented challenges, but were the most joyous to work on in stage, I think.
Well, now, Susan, are you performing in the play?
No.
Okay, because no. I was going to ask you. But you did bring some of your writing
I did.
To read for us today. Mm-hmm. Do you want to introduce both of pieces?
Sure. Sure. The first piece is about the birth, since I thought we'd start there, and kind of the process of the first few months. So there'll be, one of the actresses will be playing this piece in the play. My daughter was born not breathing and revived and whisked out of the room before I could even see her, followed by days of not knowing if she was going to live. I can still feel heartsick that I didn't get to hold her as soon as she left my body all warm and wet. I made sure I held her a lot when she came home to make up for those first 2 weeks in the hospital. I didn't get to hold her at all until she was 2 days old, and that was after she'd been drugged to stop the seizures, and only for a minute before she was ambulanced away to another hospital. She came home, and I called her my burrito baby, because you know how after you change them and wrap them all up in a blanket, they look a bit like a burrito? And she had sweet cream cheese breath. Her breath was so sweet. Now I knew what everyone was talking about. The love you feel for your child is like nothing else. It truly is unconditional, deep, and at times overwhelming. I didn't see a disability in those first 4 months. I just saw my beautiful, happy baby.
That's beautiful. And you have a really great voice. I really love your reading. So you have another piece for us.
This piece was about, several of us talked about our spiritual dilemma that happened after having a child that was diagnosed. So this was mine. I believed God would never give me more than I could handle. This assumes that God is up in heaven doling out cancer, cerebral palsy, and other challenges to teach us good folks some lessons so we'll be better people. The problem is that when life did give me more than I could handle, I railed against God. How could this be happening to me? When my child was born not breathing, I was stunned, terrified, and so angry at God. What did I do to deserve this? What could I do to make this go away? Why me? Why me? That phrase went through my head over and over again. It got tiring. I learned that for me, why is never a helpful question. What can I do now? Who can help me? Those are helpful questions. My new idea of God is a large, abstract female who sits cross-legged, and I sit, tiny me, in her giant lap, and I can lean back against her and be held. I need that kind of internal support, knowing someone's got my back.
That was Susan Cushman reading a piece from Fierce Love. It's a performance by Well Arts Institute in partnership with the United Cerebral Palsy of Oregon and Southwest Washington. And it runs March 17th through April 4th at Milagro Theater, located at 525 Southeast Stark in Portland. And for reservations or more info, you can call Well Arts or you can visit wellarts.org or visit stationstudio.org, where I have all this info as well as a podcast of this interview. I'm wondering, in the time remaining, what are some of the myths about cerebral palsy that people might have? Did you cover some of that when you're writing about how people's attitudes towards cerebral palsy, or any kind of mythology that people have or ideas about it?
I'm not sure we did. I know that some of the myths is that if someone has a physical disability, they also have an intellectual disability.
Right.
And I had that before.
I thought that before
I had my daughter. I did. I thought if I saw someone in a wheelchair, I assumed that they didn't have a brilliant mind, and that's so wrong. So many people with cerebral palsy are just so super smart. My daughter has like a super math brain. So that's part of it.
How old is your daughter now?
She's turned 23 just
Wonderful.
2 days ago. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on that. You know, it's good to hear about parents who are doing everything right, you know, that are really working towards their kids. And it really is a lifetime commitment, isn't it?
Well, cerebral palsy is a brain injury. It's not a disease or a medical condition. It's a brain injury, so it's lifelong. It's not progressive. It doesn't get worse. It's not a degenerative disease, but it's lifelong. So that's a lot of what came up in the play was mother's fears of what's going to happen to our children when we're gone. My daughter is the least severely impacted, so she can get around the world by herself, but most of the other kids can't. So what's going to happen? Who's going to love them when their parents are gone? So that's a theme in the play as well.
Oh, it sounds very powerful. Heath, who else is in the show? Do you want to give some shout-outs to some of the performers?
Absolutely. Our cast features Arlena Barnes, Zoe Rudman, Jeanette Swafford, Sumi Wu, Chelsea Thomas, and Diana Schultz.
And they're all playing different characters that are composite characters from all the writings.
As well as a whole other cast of supporting characters. So every actor is playing
multiple
characters. Yeah.
And so do you find it mostly monologue, or is it dialogue, or both?
Yeah, okay. The scenes take lots of different forms. So there are monologues with all kinds of support from the background, the other actors in the background. There are scenes, there are split scenes. Yeah, it's all over the place.
And I love the title, Fierce Love. You know, it's like that protectiveness, right, of your children.
And that came from the very beginning, a collaborative effort from the mothers deciding what they wanted this to be.
Great, great. Well, in the time remaining, Heath, what else is in store for Well Arts? What's going on with the future of Well Arts?
Absolutely. Well, Well Arts, we partner with area organizations and not-for-profits to create playwriting workshops and then subsequent performances from the writings from those workshops. And we do this in order to build bridges with different organizations and populations here in the Portland community. And we do this also to be able to act as advocates for their issues and for their members. And we're currently in the middle of a campaign fundraising drive. So you can visit our website and make a donation if you're at that time, and that's what's up with us now.
So you're basically looking for new projects, but you're also fundraising for those new projects.
We are
at the
indeed.
Same time. And so that website is wellarts.org, where you can also get information about Fierce Love, and that runs March 17th through April 4th, and visit wellarts.org or stationstudio.org. One more shout out, Susan.
Well, if you want to learn more about cerebral palsy, I am the Family Support Director at United Cerebral Palsy. You can go to our website is a community for everyone. .org.
Oh, great. Okay, communityforeveryone.org. Mm-hmm. So people check that out. Well, Susan Cushman, Heath Jan Houghton, and Erica Turpening Romeo, it's so great to have you all here, and break legs with the show. You know, have a great show, and you know, it's really heartening to hear about this kind of work, because it is really difficult, but it's also so rewarding too.
Absolutely.
When you can tell a topic from a community group that doesn't necessarily get to, you know, you don't get to hear from much.
Right. You're definitely going to learn a lot when you come to the play.
Well, have a great opening and run of the show. Next up, we have Xiaoyang Wang of the Oregon Falun Dafa Association, who talks to us about the upcoming show Shen Yun, and that's the Shen Yun Performing Arts. But first, let's hear more of their music. Thank you. I'm Dimae Roberts. We just heard music from Shen Yang. With me on the phone is Xiaoyang Wang. Are you there?
Yes, and good morning.
Good morning to you, and yes. Welcome to Stage and Studio. You're from the nonprofit organization, the Oregon Falun Dafa. Would you tell us a little bit about your group? I know it's a volunteer-run group, and yes. What kind of works do you do?
Yes, Oregon Falun Dafa Association is run by volunteers. We basically help the community to learn the practice of Falun Dafa, which is a practice of mind and body, and for self-improvement.
Now, is that Qigong? Is that what that you do? So it is it's a relaxation meditation movement type meditation. So what made you want to sponsor Shen Yun?
I think Falun Dafa itself, the practice itself is based in, is rooted in traditional Chinese culture. I think our mission is to bring this heritage back. I think we're in line with Shen Yun, and which is also having this mission there, strive to bring back the authentic Chinese culture. So we like to, to introduce this group, the culture, to our local community.
Well, in Chinese, Shen Yun translates literally to the beauty of the divine beings dancing. Is that correct? Something similar to that, I hope.
Yes, Chinese, it contains lots of meanings, one character.
Uh-huh.
So you can translate it like that, or some people will say it's a divine grace.
Oh, nice.
It just has lots of meaning.
Well, I've seen the show a couple of years ago. It comes to Portland quite often, and it's a spectacle. It really is a large-scale spectacle, 100 acrobats, dancers, and musicians, and it's quite beautiful to watch. I mean, you've got these beautiful costumes, but it's all historic.
It is. Yeah, each year they have a new set of programs and new stories, new costumes, backdrops, musical scores. So it's just every year is new. So we try to bring them back each year. It's such a beautiful art. And I think everybody can enjoy all the time.
Well, why does Shen Yun celebrate the sort of the older Chinese culture and history, performing arts?
Yeah, Chinese history. China used to be called Shenzhou. That means the land of the divine. So Chinese people always believed, their rich culture is a gift from the heavens. Chinese people also embrace this concept of oneness of man and heaven. So they always see humans are part of the whole universe. So unfortunately, this kind of culture has been destroyed since the Communist Party took power in 1949. So over past 60 years, and the people are,